Session number 22359, rule 3.
Robert Taylor, rule 3. Were you on this French ship simply because they were short of signalmen?
No. The object is that every Allied ship that has been given or loaned from Britain to the free countries, like free Norway, free Holland, free France, all those we give ships to. Well, each ship has got to have a nucleus of Britons on board. That's the idea. So when De Gaulle asked for a corvette, and we give him one for his three French sailors, it's got to have 6 or 7 British communication ratings on board. That would be about 3 telegraphists, 3 signalmen, and a coder or two. About 8 with a coder or two. So the communications are dealt with solely by the British, not by the French. And there's a reason for that, of course, I suppose. You've got to have communication ratings of British on board each ship. The Dutch had them, the Norwegians had them, they had liaison staffs. Each Allied warship, which was given by Britain, had liaison staff on board. And they wouldn't have operated without them, wouldn't have been allowed.
This is so you could communicate adequately in the English language with the Royal Navy ships?
Yes, and I also think with security as well. You don't want a French ship zooming off to join the other side, do you? Although what we could have done, I don't know. Apparently, a couple of liaison people were killed by the French, so we hear. But I've never had it substantiated. But we didn't think about that. But we're all friends. Most of those chaps there, I reckon a third of those Frenchmen there had married Scottish and English girls.
Who was your particular friend aboard ship?
My particular friend was a timonier, which is signalman. He's there somewhere, but, after a while I was told to leave him alone, because he wasn't, they didn't like him very much.
Who didn't like
there
him?
There he is. I can't get to it, but he's there.
Who didn't like him?
The other Frenchman told me, warned me off him.
What was the problem with him then?
Well, I don't know. They just said you'd be advised not to put too much, you know, friendship with him.
Did you
leave him alone? I just did.
Did you obey that?
Yeah.
Did you ever run into Fokker Wolf Condors?
Yes. I can't remember which convoy it was, but it wasn't the early ones. Must have been. I did 6 convoys. It must have been about the 5th or the 6th convoy. At night, the alarms went and we went up, manned our positions, and there was a blazing condor on the sea, blazing away. There were other condors all round, and there was firing going on, even in the darkness. And really, that was it. Just attacked by condors, few minutes, down one car, not shot down by us, but shot down by the corvette ahead of us, or the ship ahead of us. Nice firing, down he went, all ablaze. We didn't do anything like that. Didn't have a chance. The condors dropped some bombs and off they went. But it was condors, because there was a condor there to prove that it was condors. Fokker Wolf condors.
How did you like being on Atlantic convoys?
Not very much.
Why not?
Well, because I wanted to really be an air gunner. But still, I had to put up with the Atlantic convoys. I was seasick quite a bit till about the 3rd convoy, then it was all right. Oh, in that book there, there's a page of mine where I've written about 20, we picked up 20 poor Lascars. You know Lascars? We picked up about 20 poor Lascars from their burning ship, and they jumped in the burning oil, and they were choking to death, and we picked them up and brought them into the ship and laid them all down. We had one medical sailor, that's all, so we had to help him. And they were laying like this, and they were coughing, and as they coughed, oil came right up from their throats, and they kept coughing and bringing up more oil. I don't know how much oil they drank, but it was really terrible, and they were burnt too. They were all black, of course, Lascars, but they were burnt, and their hair was all gone and singed. They were coughing up all this oil, and one by one they died. Wasn't one saved. We did our best, but on a cold vet, you can't really transfer them anywhere, because I said in that book, we were lucky to be able to stop and pick them up. We were allowed to stop and pick them up, but we couldn't really transfer them to any other ships, because that was the height of the attack on the U-boat, which was responsible for sinking that particular merchant ship. So they just had to stay with us, and they died. I don't think it was any good transferring them into a hospital or anything. It wouldn't have been any good. They were all full of burning oil, and they just expired. We just had to make their way easy. You'll be all right, don't worry, and all this, hold your hand, do this, you know, all this. But we knew full well they couldn't live. They had to pay to any of them. I got a page in that book about it.
That's a book by Chris Howard
Bailey. Yeah.
About the Battle of the
Chris Howard Bailey. Yeah.
So, when you signed on, what terms did you sign on?
Hostilities only.
But then you kept on as a regular in the
Navy? Well, after the war, I thought, I do like the Navy, and I've never been in the British Navy, because I've always been in the French for the last 2 years. So I'd like to try the British Navy. So I stayed on. I asked to sign on, and I signed on. And about a year after the war, that's right, in December of 45, they put a notice up in the signal school where I was, awaiting a further posting. And they said, we want writers urgently, and we want transfers to the communication branch only. We want them to transfer. We want about a dozen, because the paperwork of people leaving the Navy has become so atrocious that it's overpowering. There's so many people going out on their agent service group, leaving the Navy after the war, that it's just, there isn't enough clerks and writers and people to cope with it all. So we want writers who will be trained in this. So I thought, well, here's an opportunity of staying in the Navy. I transferred, and I was accepted out of about 12. There's only two of us, me, transferred to writer, and one transferred to a stores accountant. Anyway, I became a writer, and I came out in 1981 as a chief petty officer writer.
Were you in any other armed conflicts after the war?
No, unfortunately. That was the last lot. I didn't go to Korea. I didn't go to I didn't go to Korea. Wish I had. No, I was stuck in the naval establishment.
How do you feel now about having served as in liaison in a French ship in the Second World War?
Well, now, of course, I could look back on it with a certain amount of pride. All those bad things have gone. The bad food, the bad living conditions, the cramped living conditions, the treatment by the French officers, one of whom hated me.
Why did he hate you?
Well, have you had any contact with Joe Beswick, my other mate, who was on the Manning Hill?
Don't think so.
Well, he'll confirm this. This particular officer, he his family had been anti-British ever since the Wars of Trafalgar. And although he hated the Germans, he hated the British as well. Now, he used to make my life misery when he was on watch. He really did. He used to insult Nelson. He knew I couldn't do anything about it. He used to insult Nelson. What are you standing for like that, looking like Lord Nelson? And all this with my telescope. He said, put your telescope to your blind eye. Well, it's all right, you laugh. But he used to make me do things. When he was on watch one day, there was a little ship, a little merchant ship, went past, right? It couldn't have had more than about five people on board. It was sailing close to the English. It was sailing close to the English coast, in the channel, sailing close to the English coast. And we were right out there. And he said, that is a French ship, he says. I want you, Taylor, to get up there and say, hello. I thought, I know you, swine. Well, it was rough. It was very rough. And the ship was doing this. And there was this little ship right in by the shore, jumping up and down, like this. Jumping up and down, being swamped. Right? It couldn't have been much more than a barge. And it was going along. He said, I'm sure it's French. He said, I want you to get up and say hello. I thought, you must be joking. He said, get up there. I got up on the bridge, on the signal platform with my projector, right? And I was going down like this towards the sea, and then right up like this, and then down the other side, as the ship went from port to starboard, down there, the water coming in, over. And it was, well, I don't have my oarskin and my oarskin hat on. It was going down my neck and everything. And he knew this. He knew it. And I said, no answer, sir. He said, keep trying. I can see it. Keep trying, he says. Well, this little ship was disappearing into the mist and fog, right, along the coast of England. Just disappearing. And he said, I want you to keep trying. Call that ship up. And anyway, he saw me getting drenched to high heaven. He saw me going down almost to the sea level as the ship went over, up into the air. He saw me doing it. How he expected me to get a light on the ship, I don't know. Because one moment the light was put into the water, and next it was up in the heavens. So anyway, I would do my best to keep it level. But the ship never answered, of course. Probably never had a signal or a light on board. Probably never had one of these lamps like this. Just going about its business from port to port, probably. Anyway, in the end, in the absolute end, when he could see that I was absolutely fed up and thought I might report it to the BNLO, British Naval Liaison Officer, he told me to stop. By then, I was so soaked to the skin I had to endure another 2 hours on watch with him, absolutely drenched in Wellington, piled with water, and all that sort of thing. I mean, well, right down to my vest it was absolutely, the seawater was everywhere. And he knew it, and he enjoyed it. He hated the Brits, and anything he could do, the reason it was me, he couldn't do it to the others. They were men, right? They were men. And they would have, I'd have throttled him or done something. Anyway, because I was the youngest kid, and British, he took all his frustrations out on me.
Did he say he hated the English?
No, but you can tell. Oh, I heard he did. Oh, I heard he did. Yeah. Whenever I used to go up on watch, and he was there, Lieutenant M, it began with an M. Every time I went up on watch, and he was there as officer of watch, I was thinking, here he bloody where I go. Oh, dear.